Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, the last time we caught up with this guy, he was telling us, all sorts of things like digital celebrities becoming more and more prevalent, and adults, particularly males, not being able to do certain things, go certain places because of this kind of question mark above their heads as to whether they're actually safe or not. His name is Richard Watson. He's a futurologist. Now Next is his organisation, where we're looking at geopolitics tonight and what the changes might be on the horizon. Richard, welcome again.
Thank you very much.
All right, let me give you a few trends that you have mapped out in this big trends map that you do every year. You call it the trends timeline. And you can then kind of explain them a little bit further, because some of these are really quite interesting. You suggest a trend for the future is that globalisation is going to start to unravel.
Yes, I think it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's a probability, but I think it's something that we might sort of think about. And I think that there's some evidence of this happening already. I mean, this is partly a classic example of counter trends. If you have a trend like fast food, it spawns slow food. So if you have a trend like globalization, you get localism coming off the back.
And we've seen that already kind of generating a fair bit of momentum in the last few years, haven't we?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the GFC has led to quite a sort of rise in economic protectionism, and we're beginning to see a rise in resource nationalism. And that alone could actually cause globalization to sort of unravel. I'm not suggesting that it'll stop completely. I just think it could unravel in certain places. The other thing that's really driving this is the rise of China in particular, but also some other countries, you know, Middle East and India and Brazil and so on. If the US is in the driving seat of the world economy, they are going to be, in my view, very pro-free trade. The minute that China is number one, I think somewhere like America will get quite protectionist and it'll reverse. I think also the average person doesn't like globalization very much. They're not really seeing, well, what am I getting out of this? So I think at heart, we're quite tribal as people. And I don't think we're necessarily buying into this sort of whole global argument. I think the other thing is that it depends on which country or which region you're talking about. So I think places like China are embracing globalization and free trade, and other countries, particularly countries in Northwest Europe or the US, are beginning to question it and are beginning to sort of withdraw into their national boundaries. And a lot of regulation is collapsing back into national boundaries and so on and so forth. So there'll be an interesting sort of battle there where you've got some regions embracing it and some regions trying to actively reject it. And I think this is largely going to be driven by resources as well. I think, you know, there's a lot of discussion around peak oil, and there's peak all sorts of other things, lithium, copper, water, all sorts of things. It is clearly in people's interests economically and also from a security point of view to restrict the flow of certain resources. So I think that also could actually start making the whole thing unravel. And particularly oil. I think if you start thinking of oil at 150, 200, 250 a barrel, what does that do to the geopolitical landscape? And in my view, it relocalizes manufacturing and consumption. And you just cannot afford to move certain things around, particularly on planes. Ships are kind of okay, but moving things around on airplanes, particularly people, doesn't necessarily work so much. Or you add all of these things together, and I think there is a bit of a question mark over how globalized the future really will look. The reality is it'll be a mixture. It's this phrase that Richard Neville uses a lot, which is glocal. You know, some things are highly globalized and other things are unbelievably localized, and they work in combination and quite often contradict each other.
Yeah, 1-300-40-20-20 is my number. I'd love to hear your feelings about that. Are you happy that we may not be heading towards again a globalized society as much as we have been? You also talk about the emergence of a quote gross national happiness metric. What is that?
This was widely talked about just before the global financial crisis, and I think was largely a result of a lot of navel-gazing going on because people didn't have better things to do. And obviously, the minute some people have better things to worry about, like their job, their mortgage, this sort of instantly disappears. But I think we, particularly in this region, now feel that we've fixed the economy, so we're going to go back to worrying about the environment will be one thing, and happiness is another. And I think this really relates to these sort of graphs you see, where the fabulous graphs, where you plot income against overall satisfaction and happiness, and income is sort of going up and happiness is going down, and there's clearly no linkage whatsoever between money and happiness beyond the sort of basic threshold. I mean, off the top of my head, I think it's $30,000 a year or something.
I think I heard that too.
And
there's
a country, and I can't remember which one it is, that's actually started looking at happiness, and it's part of their national strategy. And I people in the US and the UK are trying to come up with ways of actually measuring happiness. I mean, it's partly a ridiculous idea that you can measure it any more than you can buy it. I mean, I think there are certain people that are trying to turn happiness into a consumer product,
and you can
just go to the supermarket and get it. There's a school in the UK that teaches happiness, which maybe that's okay, but to me, happiness is a byproduct of other things. And also, happiness cannot exist unless you have sadness. The two go together. So it's a little bit of a weird discussion, but it was a couple of years ago, something was very much on the agenda. There was a conference in Sydney about happiness. There's a happiness institute. People talk a lot about work-life balance, and I think implicit in that is some sort of debate about overall happiness. And it is something people want. It also links very much into the search for meaning. It links slightly into the spiritualism and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a thing that is going to be very much on the agenda with governments and individuals in the future.
Open House is what you're listening to. Richard Watson is with us. We're talking about geopolitical trends in the future. What do you think about the idea of a national happiness metric? I remember a few years ago they were talking about maybe a well-being index, which I think happiness is a hard thing to rate, and I'm fully with you. It's an outgrowth. It's a product of a life. And maybe well-being could be more easily measured in the sense that you could talk about various things in terms of depression levels, in terms of health levels, in terms of nutrition levels and various things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is an index which ranks global cities in terms of sort of livability or well-being, and it annoys me every year because Melbourne's always in front of Sydney for some reason. But so people are clearly doing that, and it's to do with, you know, average house prices and commuting distances and the cost of certain goods and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's some value in that, but I think you can take it too far.
Yeah. Okay, the rise of N11 countries you talk about. We've had, you know, G8s, etc. You talk about N11 countries, which you include as Bangladesh, Egypt, Indonesia, Iran, Mexico, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, South Korea, Turkey, and Vietnam. What's so interesting about these countries?
It's yet another bunch of acronyms. And we've got the BRICS, which are Brazil, Russia, India, China. Then Brazil got slightly demoted and it became CHIME, which is China, India, Middle East. We've got, you know, the G8. Now people are starting to talk about the G2, which is China and the US. It's really, I think it was developed by Goldman Sachs as, you know, really interesting emerging markets. And it's a mixture of size of population, I think, you know, where location would come into it slightly. It's where the action is going to be effectively in the future. And it's the sort of tier underneath the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China. And you're beginning to see this already. I mean, China is running out of skilled workers and are starting to outsource some of their sort of capacity into some of these places, call centers going into Philippines. And the other one that's not in the N11 list particularly is North Africa. I'm beginning to hear quite interesting conversations about North Africa as a place where things will be outsourced in the future, again, because China is running out of skilled workers effectively. Yeah. And where can we get stuff produced cheaply?
Yeah. Huh, fascinating. All right. Now, while we've talked about the trends, we always throw in a couple of your predictions in here. So you predict that perhaps by 2050, we might have something called a pulse bomb. Sounds ominous and concerning. What do you think it is?
Well, again, these sort of things are generally around in some form. It's just they either don't work or they're not used or whatever. So they do slightly exist already. I'm really talking about a sort of electromagnetic pulse that disables primarily communication. So it's a bit like a lightning strike on a house and your microwave doesn't work and neither does your computer. You are sending an extremely high charge into a specific location with the idea of disabling communications. And if you think about how networked we are in terms of communications and technology these days, the right sort of strike in the right place could completely wipe out some quite critical infrastructure. And I think that's going to be one of the sort of features of warfare in the future. And first of all, we're going to have cyber warfare, we already do. But rather than actually physically killing people or destroying property, we're going to go after communications and technological infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's run by computers, so if you can destroy the computers, you can cause havoc.
Yeah, so you said we've kind of got something like that around here now. I mean, who's using it?
I think the US is playing around with this.
Hmm. All right. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see what the future holds. And it's always interesting to have you give us a glimpse of what could be. Thanks for your time again, Richard.
Thank you very much indeed.
We'll catch up with you in a fortnight's time. That's trends expert Richard Watson. NowandNext.com is his website. The Future Files is his book.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.